And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is being recorded on February 21st, 2022. The global carbon dioxide level is 418.76 parts per million, and there are 2,871 days left to the year 2030. So the clock keeps ticking. Turns out here in Massachusetts, we have since we were part of the original colonization, for better or worse, I mean, a whole story there. But the New England colonies are, the New England states are all pretty small compared to some of the other states in the country. And amongst even the New England states, Rhode Island is almost tiny. Right? It's the smallest state in the union, very proud state. A lot of many good things have happened there. And of course, it's right adjacent to Massachusetts, right? And because climate change is such a all-encompassing topic, but at the same time, at least in my own feeling, sometimes the discussion about state policy efforts to address climate change gets siloed. And I spend a lot of my time thinking about Massachusetts, right? And like right next door or other states. And so I thought it would be useful to have a discussion about what is the state of play of climate politics in the proud state of Rhode Island? And to that end, we are fortunate to have an expert with us today. We're joined by Kai Salem, who is the policy coordinator at an organization called Green Energy Consumers Alliance, and knows a lot, shall we say, about Rhode Island climate politics. How are you doing, Kai? Welcome aboard.
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you here. So, Kai, am I right? Is climate activism siloed? I mean, do people in Rhode Island, every state has to deal with their own issues. Tell me, what is going on in Rhode Island in terms of addressing climate change?
So we suddenly have a lot going on in Rhode Island when it comes to climate policy. But I think to answer this question, I have to go back a little bit, of course. And I will start off by saying that Rhode Island got off to an early lead when it came to clean energy policy. In the early 2000s, we were one of the first states in the country to have a renewable energy standard. In Massachusetts, that's known as the Renewable Portfolio Standard. We also were adopted energy efficiency programs before Massachusetts did. We were one of the first states to adopt offshore wind legislation, and that led to us being the first state to have an offshore wind farm. And a number of other great things happened early on when it comes to climate policy. But I think Massachusetts and Rhode Island, if we could point to one place where their climate policy diverged, it would be that Massachusetts in 2008 passed mandatory carbon emissions reductions targets in the Global Warming Solutions Act. Rhode Island had climate targets starting in 2014, but those were not mandatory until this past year, April 2021, when the Act on Climate was signed into law. That Act on Climate was the result of many years of pushing and coordination by the environmental community here in Rhode Island. And we can already see that it is changing the entire conversation around climate policy. When I started doing this work, I actually arrived in Rhode Island and started working on climate policy right after the non-mandatory climate targets passed in 2014. And for 7 years, we had very little happening here. This year, when you look at our legislative session, it's like an explosion. We have many, many different bills being proposed to address carbon emissions reductions across electricity, buildings, and transportation. And I think we can draw a clear line from the action we see now to last year's passage of an Act on Climate, which sets the bar and kicks so much in motion.
So what happened? I mean, what was the spark, shall we say, that got, so we're talking about the April of 2021, there was the quote unquote Act on Climate, right? Which was this bill that, how come that saw the light of day if things had been, shall we say, dormant up till then?
Yeah, great question. I think One, there are many factors, but one that I put foremost is the coordination and work of advocates. Rhode Island had, again, we'd had some clean energy advocacy, but we went through 3 years in a row, three legislative sessions in a row, where the House leadership in particular was not amenable to climate action at all. So there was some politics behind it, and not a single climate, energy, or environmental bill passed of any kind. Like, this is unimaginable on Massachusetts standards, not a single environmental bill.
Three sessions would be 6 years, right? 3 2-year sessions?
In Rhode Island, we have 1-year sessions.
Oh, okay, all right. But 3 years were just dead calm, nothing, no yeah. stirring breeze, no thunder in the distance, nothing.
Nothing could even get a conversation. We couldn't get a meeting with leadership. We couldn't bring a bill to a floor vote.
But you guys were there pushing for it, right?
We were there. Okay. And as I think between right around the year before the pandemic began, as an environmental community, we got together and said, just something has to change and we need to put our collective weight behind the Act on Climate. And environmental organizations, which anyone who has worked with environmental organizations knows that we don't always agree, often not even climate activists agree, but certainly it's really, really hard to get to the land use activists and the water advocates and the climate people, everyone together pushing behind one bill. And so I think what we accomplished as an environmental community, launching the Climate Crisis Campaign, which was the campaign behind the Act on Climate, and collectively prioritizing a single piece of legislation, is remarkable and led to the speedy passage of this bill during the 2021 session.
So you referred to this umbrella group, and just to be clear, it's what's the URL? ClimateCrisisRI.org? Is that where if people want to check it out?
So we have the Environment Council of Rhode Island is okay. The coalition of environmental organizations in Rhode Island that helps coordinate our work across all sorts of policy issue areas. And we started the Climate Crisis Campaign, which has its own website focused on climate policy called RIClimateCrisis.org.
And this is and you were saying that this is a collaboration of many of the nonprofits in Rhode Island, right? Across a broad spectrum, right? That's fascinating.
Yeah, we have over 60 organizations involved, and we represent many individuals as well.
And so did you have to go in and testify in the Rhode Island State House and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, we had so when we launched the Climate Crisis Campaign, we, of course, had no idea that we would be soon in a pandemic. And on March 7th, 2020, I believe it was, we had a really incredible hearing for the Act on Climate. And that was hearing rooms packed with folks with Act on Climate buttons. And it was a great showing. But of course, just a week later, there was no more going to the State House and really no legislation passed in Rhode Island that year. So we had to wait until the next session when it was all virtual, but we did have some in-person rallies and things like that outside to support the bill.
Interesting. So you would say that I can't help but sort of compare and contrast Massachusetts and Rhode Island. What you're saying is that Rhode Island has found a way, the community of environmental groups in Rhode Island has found a way to collaborate. And I think I would also point out that you said focused on a single piece of legislation. So that side of focus is also very helpful, right? So you get all of the actors rowing in the same direction. I'll use an ocean phrase. We're all rowing along and you're all going in the right direction, focused on one goal. Is that a model that you think will, I guess you'd hope it sustains, right, going forward?
Yeah. So the Climate Crisis Campaign is still going and we're still very well coordinated, especially when it comes to implementation of the Act on Climate. Now that the Act on Climate has passed, we have to actually meet those goals. In Massachusetts, there is the Clean Energy and Climate Plan process, the Implementation Advisory Committee, and a number of other bodies that are set up to get to the Global Warming Solutions Act goals. In Rhode Island, we're still at the beginning of that process, But we certainly find the experience of Massachusetts very useful in figuring out how we meet similar goals in Rhode Island. But we are well coordinated on the administrative advocacy for implementation. But also we have picked a new top priority for the climate crisis campaign, which is getting to 100% renewable electricity by 2030.
100% renewable electricity by 2030. That's a great goal. And what's the, so I have to ask, I think our listeners would know, are you saying that all electricity will come from windmills in Rhode Island? Or are you saying that you will be buying renewable energy credits to offset the state's plan? I mean, what's the mix there?
Yes. So this would be updating our existing renewable energy standard, which many of the listeners may know. It was based on renewable energy certificates. Currently, it requires that the utility company, or really all energy suppliers in Rhode Island, supply their customers with 20% of their electricity from renewable sources. And that is anything that qualifies for a Class 1 equivalent renewable energy certificate in New England: wind, solar, small-scale sustainable hydro, things like that. But we want to update the renewable energy standard so that it reaches 100% by 2030.
And I got to ask, in Massachusetts, the law calls for a 3% yearly increase under the analog, the RPS here, right? What percentage each year are you, I don't want to put you on the spot if you don't remember the exact number, but how much per year do you have to increase to make it to 100% by 2030?
We're currently at 1.5% in the existing law, but this would up per year.
Yep.
But the proposed legislation updates it. It's like an exponential increase, like an exponential curve you should picture. So in 2028, 2029, it's an 11% per year increase, but closer to now, I think we're talking more 4 or 5%.
Interesting. So I got to ask you, I mean, Rhode Island is a beautiful place, right? If you go down the south coast of Rhode Island along the shore, it's just gorgeous, right? That begs two questions. How is Rhode Island particularly vulnerable to climate change? I mean, all these beautiful places are going to get flooded. And the other question is, given Rhode Island's proximity to the ocean, does it have advantages in being part of the clean energy transition?
Yes, great question. So Rhode Island, of course, is particularly vulnerable to sea level rise, as you pointed out, but we also are the fastest warming state in the 48 contiguous states. And we also have a lot of our economy and our cultural heritage based around marine environments, and the ocean is particularly vulnerable to climate change. So Rhode Island needs to make acting on climate central to our economy and our cultural identity. And I think we can do that. We started to do that with how early we started developing offshore wind here in Rhode Island. And I think that we had collectively this desire to become a center of the offshore wind industry. Unfortunately, over the past couple of years, Rhode Island has done very little to nurture that industry. And I think that we've seen Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, other states take the lead, take the crown in attracting the offshore wind industry. I think Rhode Island can still catch up, but it has to get some points on the board. And the way that it can do that is doing another big procurement for offshore wind. We keep investing in our ports and things like that, but we're not going to bring the industry here if we're not actually creating the jobs and creating the projects.
And just give you a chance to brag about the Block Island Wind Farm, right? Which is the first one in the nation, beat the one here in Massachusetts that was so, but I mean, Block Island again is this gorgeous place off of Rhode Island. It's got a relatively small but functioning wind, is like 3-5 kind of wind turbines off Block Island, right? Yeah. And that's the example. Rhode Island did it first, right?
We did. We've got 5 turbines, and we do have one more 400 megawatt project in the works currently.
Well, I think that. So tell me, is there, I mean, this is a big question, but Do you think, should, let me pose the question, let me bang, start again, right? Should climate activists in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New Hampshire, should they be talking to each other to discuss regional issues? Is there advantage from your perspective? You have a, you know about Massachusetts, Rhode Island. Are there regional advantages that we're missing because everyone lives in a different zip code kind of thing?
I think there's pros and cons of the regional approach. We are lucky to live in New England where we are relatively well coordinated as a region and most of our neighbors share similar clean energy goals. We have the advantage of having our own states where we can experiment and see what works and learn from each other. But we also do rely upon other states to clean up their own electric grids, for example. We have this regional electric grid, and Rhode Island can get to 100% clean electricity through the renewable energy standard. But when we turn on the lights, we're still going to be getting dirty electrons unless all the other states in the region clean up their electricity grid as well. But I think there are some good examples of regional collaboration. For example, the Transportation and Climate Initiative, although it has now been put on the permanent back burner, shall we say, that was regional collaboration, and we were going to be doing that together. Mm-hmm. Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative and many other examples show that it can be done.
Interesting. Yeah, you're right. I mean, and I think that the, I mean, one thing that I'm personally all wound up about now is ISO New England, which governs all New England states, has pulled this sort of arcane rule out of the dustbin of history, right? This MOPR rule, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but basically yes. It will deny for the whole region. And so we don't need that. That's a topic unto itself that we don't need to go into right now. I think it is really impressive. It's wonderful to hear that Rhode Island, in your description, has recognized the need and there's actually things underway. So tell me, if someone wanted to get involved in this effort to pass legislation how is there a grassroots component? What organizations can people join? What should they do?
Yes. So the best way to get involved is first to find out how to get involved. So I would recommend that Rhode Islanders sign up to receive Rhode Island Climate Crisis Campaign updates, which you can do at riclimatecrisis.org. If you're interested in environmental advocacy beyond just climate change, the Environment Council of Rhode Island is a great resource. Green energy consumers, we have an upcoming policy webinar that will be, I believe we're actually rescheduling it to the week of March 7th to give us a little bit more time to see what hearings are coming up. But we will tell our members more about the policy we're supporting, what they can do to help. And the final thing I'll shout out is Climate Action Rhode Island is the Rhode Island branch of 350, and they do a great job organizing grassroots advocacy for climate policy.
Super. And so those are great. What I saw recently, I think that you were on it. There was a webinar about advocacy, teaching people how to. There's a link that we could put in the show notes, right? To that, to people to watch the video of that, right?
Great idea. Yes.
So there's and if they want to find it, if people want to find out about the March 7th event, March 7th, 2022, they should go to. They could go to, let's see, Rhode Island Climate Campaign, the ECRI, or even the Green Energy Consumers Alliance. All those links would be in the notes, right, to find out this event, right?
Yes.
Super, super. Well, Kai, it makes me happy to hear all of this good news out of little tiny Rhode Island, and I congratulate you guys on doing good things there. What I'll do is I'll put the links into the show notes that will be at the blog at massclimateaction.org. Massachusetts, you should know, is like right near Rhode Island, so it's all relevant. It all hangs together. You can take Route 95 take an MBTA train from Boston to Providence if you want. If you have comments about the show or things that we ought to be talking about, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. You're probably listening to this show on your smartphone using one of the modern podcast distribution apps. We can be found on almost all of them except for Spotify lately. Please check us out on Apple Podcasts. That's the easiest way to find us. Climate Action, you might have to add Massachusetts Climate Action Network. I want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. I want to close where we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. So we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities. So, Kai, thank you so much for coming and enlightening us about the great stuff in Rhode Island.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's great. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool. Ha 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 ha.